CV Focus is brought to you by Total Care, the UK experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Visit totalcare.co.uk and learn about their market-leading mobile column lifts, fixed post lifts, brake testers, inspection pits, and more. Total Care, lifting business one vehicle at a time.
So hello and welcome to this week's CV Focus podcast for ITTHub.net. I suppose with the in the UK, I should say, with the recent announcement regarding sort of government four-point roadmap reducing sort of lockdown restrictions over the next couple of months, there does seem to be an air of optimism, I suppose, both in business and in your personal lives as well, and hopefully return to some sort of normality. It's hopefully just around the corner. But I also think it's sort of important to sort of balance the book a little bit and to find out how other nations are dealing with the sort of current situation and how they're how they're faring with what's going on. And I suppose more importantly, how their future lies and how they sort of manoeuvre themselves out of it. And where better to turn to than Ireland, really. And joining me today is a great friend and supporter of ITT, which is Jarlath Sweeney. Now, Jarlath is the publisher of Fleet Magazine in Ireland. And I'm sure, knowing him as I do, he's bound to give us a good perspective and a good Irish perspective of what's going across, what's going on over the Irish Sea. Hi, Jarlath, how's it going? All right.
Good, Matthew, and thanks for the opportunity.
How's business? How's business faring?
Well, it's up and down, to be honest with you. We're a year into it now, and as you know, part of our business is networking, where we go to events and exhibitions and really press the flesh and generate business from that. And as you know, I used to be away pretty much nearly every week here from my West of Ireland base. And it's been over a year, actually, since I've been away, funny enough. So my wife and children are very used to me now. They know who the strange man is, at least at this stage. But it's been difficult from a business perspective as well, because of the fact that we're not networking, but also there has been a lack of confidence in business, because even though road transport has been fairly vibrant from a road haulage point of view and also from an e-commerce home deliveries point of view, that has been kept pretty busy, as you know. But there are some retail areas and outlets that haven't been opened, you know, since the first lockdown, now second, and we're into the third. And the UK are a step ahead of us in regard to lifting the restrictions. Our Prime Minister just announced yesterday that we will still be locked down until the 5th of April, which has caused another era of depression in the whole economy and our mindfulness, shall we say, because we thought we'd be back sooner than that. But they're being quite cautious in controlling the numbers, which they have brought down pretty well in the last month or so. And the vaccines, as you know, is rolling out, not as sporadic as you have experienced in the UK. But he made a promise yesterday that by the end of June, everybody will have been received their first vaccine, which is a good sign. It's ongoing at the moment for the elderly and the people that are, vulnerable towards health conditions. But in general, we have to deal with the whole COVID situation, which we are coping pretty well now. But we also had the whole Brexit issue, Matthew, which I'd like to talk to you about in due course as well, because that has been a major factor in the whole socio-economic business of transport, exports, imports as well, of course, because the exports are well and good, but they have to import the raw materials as well to manufacture the goods. So maybe we can talk about that in a minute. With regard to the whole, call it the commercial vehicle landscape, as you've experienced in the UK, the numbers are down, which was to be expected due to the lack of confidence in going forward in fleet renewals. In relation to finance, we've had a major blow during the week, actually, when NatWest, that's the owners of Ulster Bank, have withdrawn from Ireland now. And it'll be over a phased basis for the next number of years. And they have been very successful in supporting small businesses. I mean, retail outlets, garages, haulage companies. You know, we'll call it the small to medium enterprises. They have been very good over the decades in supporting them. And even my own hometown, I know of a lot of business that actually got great support from the Ulster Bank over the years. And also from a sponsorship point of view, they've been very supportive as well, which is all part and parcel of what they do. So they've, NatWest, their owners have decided to withdraw from the Irish market over a phased basis for 3 to 4 years. And that will have a detrimental effect because it reduces the competition in the commercial lending landscape, for example, and also from a deposit point of view, because of the fact that you're now into pretty much negative interest rates for deposits. So anyone that has a few quid out there, they're not going to put it into the bank because they're not going to get anything out of it. So maybe they put it into pension funds, maybe put it into property. Property is very buoyant at the moment. And maybe that's something I wish to speak with you now in relation to commercial property is booming. Warehousing is just out the window, out the door with new bills, investment in exchanging of premises. And what I've seen as well, that during the whole COVID business, as you probably experienced yourself, Matthew, over there, that there was quite a bit of stockpiling. Goods that were manufactured and they were just putting them away for the rainy day and kept doing so. And then the whole Brexit issue added to that. But we've seen a number of major haulage companies looking to beat the whole Brexit situation where they actually established warehousing facilities in the British Isles, shall we say, from Scotland right down to the British Midlands, right down towards the actual airports surrounding London. And we've seen that they have reached capacity already with what they're doing. So some of them actually have defleeted their trucks where they would have them registered in Ireland initially and decided to bring over their fresh fleet to the UK and register them there and get their operators license in their new UK base. And what we've seen is where they're still using the land bridge, Matthew, but they're sending over the trailers unaccompanied, but they're met by the trucks on the far side, shall we say, with their new registered English plates and going to mainland Europe with their loads are actually around the UK, wherever the case may be. In addition to that, we have seen quite a turnaround in the movement of goods out of Ireland through the north into Scotland and also through Rosslare into Spain and France. Now, new routes have opened into Dunkirk, as you probably know, and Calais. And the Rosslare Airport, which is owned by the Irish government part of the Welsh government, would you believe, they have experienced a 600% increase in business, which is phenomenal when you think about it. And as a result, Holyhead has reduced in business by 75%. And as you know, Holyhead has been the main route to the UK and to Europe. Now, there's a number of factors there, Matthew, in relation to the logistics involved. The exporter or the manufacturer of the goods really don't care where and how the trucks get to their final destination as long as they do at the proper rate. Now, what the fear that has been, experienced in the whole build-up to the Brexit issue was the customs and the tariffs and the delays at ports and getting into the mainland Britain ports and getting out from the far side to the French ports, for example. They envisaged that it would be quicker to go on these new routes through to France direct from Ireland. What it means is that it's costing about 500 to 600 euro more. It's slower. But what it does, the only advantage at the moment is that it's actually allowing the driver to take his rest period during that particular time on the boat. So they have a free run to get further without a break on the far side when they get to France. And as you know, the Northern Irish ports, the Northern French ports are quite near to European destinations. So that's where we've seen the routes happening now. All is well and good for now, as regards the weather isn't too bad and we're coming into the summer. But take, for instance, when you get bad weather towards the autumn and into winter, there may be some cancellations in these ferries, and that's where the problem could arise. But there is a slow, gradual campaign to get back into the land bridge again because, okay, at the moment, things aren't too bad as regards delays at Holyhead and the situation in Kent is not as bad as the individuals either. But in general, you probably see a plateau coming that you'll divide the actual routes from Belfast to Stranraer in the north in Scotland. You'll see more traffic heading back to Holyhead and down to the mainland Britain that way. And then you'll see more taking the Cork Calais route or the Rosslare Dunkirk route. So there will be a balance between all. Now, in general, the manufacturers, the exports are good, they're buoyant. In relation to the imports, they're doing okay as well. But there has been some, we call it, a limited damage in the fact that while the haulier depends on backloads, and it was easier to find them when they get back into England to get the load back into Dublin or around the country, it's more difficult to seek that return load in mainland Europe. So that is a factor that's under consideration, and there's quite a number of top-line hauliers that are coming back with empty trailers, which is not profitable, as you can imagine.
Yeah, it's interesting times, isn't it? I mean, it's changing times. I mean, from where we are, we're in the northwest of England here. You know, it's very, very common to see a lot of Irish registered trucks that are obviously coming over on the night boat from Holyhead, running across North Wales, and you know, you just don't see them. You just sort of see the volume. You just don't see it anymore. Not that we're out travelling too much, but the times we have had occasion to travel and look at the vehicles on the road, you know, you can see there's a definite sort of downturn in foreign registered vehicles that sort of transit in the UK. And I mean, I've used that Landbridge service, and you know, and it's a good service. And I think you're probably right. You know, we're going to get into a situation where the markets will come back and the routes will come back, but probably not in the volumes. It's, you know, it's split against. I know certain ferry companies were trying very hard to sort of get them to use maybe two, or you know, Cairn Ryan, Holyhead, and probably one of the Welsh, you know, one of the Welsh ports. And now, as I say, they're going to start opening, having basically taking the route around the mainland Britain to get into Europe, aren't they?
Yes, and there's the Landbridge is about 12 hours quicker, Matthew, and that is a consideration, especially for the perishable goods that go out of Ireland or come into Ireland, as the case may be. But there is another factor as well, which hasn't really come to force yet, is the choice that the holidaymaker will have. As you know, the ferries are not taking passengers at the moment as regards to walk-on or holiday traffic, non-commercial traffic is the best way to describe it, possibly. That there, I expect that there will be a huge upsurge in people taking their holidays, probably in France like they normally do, or even in the UK with some type of vehicle, either a camper van or a caravan or just an MPV or an SUV or whatever type of vehicle that would accommodate their families, that they will actually have a great choice now. And I imagine that the ferries will be competing against each other for price. As regards, it'll be very competitive for them because it'll be a bit like the airlines. They'll be competing for business. And they know that once the airlines get back up and running as well, that they'll be offering very cheap prices as well. So it's going to be a very good market for the holidaymaker that wishes to go abroad if they can.
I think you're right. I think it's going to come back strong, isn't it? I think it really is. I think once we get into the sort of middle of the year, and you know, hopefully restrictions on both sides, you know, because it's good to see people coming across from you know, Ireland to the UK as well on holiday. But as I said, once those restrictions do start to get lifted, I think it's going to be really, really buoyant anyway. You know, I think we are looking, hopefully, towards sort of a very, very busy middle, you know, sort of busy middle to the end of the 2021. And as I say, from an Irish angle, you know, we've had the Brexit to deal with from our side, and obviously the pandemic. But from a nation that is a lot smaller in population, it's probably those issues could be sort of compounded somewhat, don't you think, Darla?
Well, certainly, one of the big issues was the preparation involved, Matthew, for the whole Brexit, because it was, even though it was 3 or 4 years in being, it wasn't right down to the last few months that things started to get a bit hot, shall we say, in regards to what resources were required from the customs and excise, for example, from the whole resources required for the inspections. As you know, Dublin Port is our biggest port, and they had to put in infrastructure there to have a facility to inspect the vehicles on a random basis. They weren't going to inspect them all because there's no way Airclave that could do that. But similar to what you see in Calais, for example, you know, you might have experienced yourself where randomly they may pick a vehicle out and you'd have to go through the tunnel for the x-ray vision, etc. So that wasn't in place in Dublin previously because they never had to, because you had a free flow pretty much into UK and into Europe, and there was never a problem, you know. So with regard to the infrastructure, they put it in place, and they also had to upgrade Rosslare, because Rosslare was a pretty dormant facility up to now. It had services. I think they had about 6 services a week, and they have something like 16 now. So they had to really upgrade the facility for accommodating the trucks for parking as they waited to go on or to go off, as I guess maybe to go out, and also the staffing required. So that all had to be put in place. Now, with regard to the whole VAT structure, another element of business that has been really affected by the whole Brexit issue is the importation of used cars and used trucks, as in used vans and trucks from the UK. Not as much as there used to be, but that was big business one time. But when you consider that over 100,000 used cars were coming over from the UK into the Irish market every year, that's a phenomenal amount of vehicles to enter the market, because our new car sales is about 120,000. So when you consider that's quite a bit of business from a retail point of view. Now, some of the outlets would be established garages here that may have a partner, a dealership, depends on the actual maker model that they had. For example, if they had a Volkswagen dealership here, my partner with a Volkswagen dealer in Manchester, for example, and they would crisscross with business that way. Similarly, you would have about 600 used trucks and about 6,000 used vans coming over every year as well. Now, some of those would be, again, done through the proper channels. In other words, they'd become from a Volvo used dealer in the UK to a Volvo dealer here in Ireland. And they would be top spec and well warranted, and there'd be no issue about them at all. But the government on both sides had to come in with an arrangement that they increased the VAT in the importation, but they also put in a tariff, Matthew, for the valuation of the vehicle for vans and trucks. For trucks, it's something like 6%, and I think it's vans about 16%. And that all adds up when you put the VAT on it as well. So that has really affected the business. It's down to about 25% of what it was. And across the board, that's cars and commercials. So that has put some, we call it, focus on the used vehicles coming into Ireland, because what it did was it kept the trade buoyant here with regard to prices. So what you're probably going to see is that the used vehicles will be more expensive here now because of a lesson that go around. And secondly, the quality of the used vehicles coming over from the UK were superior because the spec might be higher, because you guys spec your vehicles more than what we would here. So, and also the road networks are better in the UK, so the wear and tear would be less, for example. And you probably have more vehicles that are with automatic transmission, for example, than we would have here. You know, just simple things in that regard. And of course, diesel now is not becoming as popular as it used to be, which is another factor. And a lot of, I'd say 80% of imports were actually 3 to 4 year old diesel powered cars, but now it's not as fashionable, shall we say, to have a diesel car. So the petrol won't be as good a value in that respect. And of course, all our governments are pushing towards electric mobility with either electric or hybrids or plug-in hybrids or some kind of alternative traction. So that's another issue as regards trying to meet a deadline I think it's 1 million vehicles here in Ireland by 2030, which is quite achievable. or unachievable, I should say.
Let's just talk about the market, because it's quite interesting the numbers you're giving us there, because obviously it's a smaller market than we're used to seeing. But what I mean, first and foremost, just take it step by step. Obviously, sales are down, but are they dramatically down? Let's just talk. I mean, vans and trucks. You know, where is the market at the minute? And then what I want to do is talk about the sort of rollout of electric vehicles into the Irish marketplace.
Yeah, well, truck sales are down about 22%, Matthew, across the board. I'm talking about from 16 ton upwards, pretty much. Van sales are not as badly affected, but again, there's a factor there because of the fact that when you look at the e-commerce business and the huge increase in trade there, and the fact that the delivery guys are doing far more mileage than they originally had planned, that they may have to actually change their vehicles more often than they had originally planned, allowed for simple reason is that they probably reached the mileage target before the warranty, if you know what I mean. So it looks that they will have to change their vehicles earlier than expected. So the overall figure for the downturn in the van market is about 14% from last year. But that's, that's just an issue as regards with the whole e-commerce business primarily. The move to electric is slow from a commercial point of view, even though the majority of brands, as you know yourself, offer some form of electric van now or a hybrid, as the case of Ford. But the in general, the electric vehicles do serve a purpose, but they are more expensive, as we know. And it's going to take a while for them to get into the mainstream market, I'll put it that way. What we've seen is that the blue chip companies like to have electric because it's good PR exercise for them. They like to see and promote the fact that they have electric vehicles in their fleet. And also our semi-states, as you've probably seen yourself, the semi-state bodies like our utility companies, they are obliged to go to electric now early, so that they're actually demonstrating from a government point of view that they're actually moving towards electric and electric works for them. So our electric supply board, for example, are really increasing their number of vehicles, and they're test driving the new Renault Master ZE for at the moment now, the latest one with the higher range. So they have bought some Nissans in the past, and they're looking at a higher capacity vehicle now, the 3.5-ton Renault Master ZE, for example. Which is very interesting because rural Ireland, as you know, when you take our county alone, which where I'm living pretty much in the center of the West, is still 75 miles to the coastline in some parts of this county here. So for a utility vehicle to operate successfully within a comfortable range distance, they still need to have around 300 kilometers from start to finish in the battery charge. So the driver and the operator needs to have confidence in the vehicle. With regard to trucks, the electric truck business hasn't really taken off here yet. Fuso have sold a few of the smaller e-canters, all right, but I haven't seen anything pretty much yet. And it's only what we've seen in Europe, Matthew, with the likes of Mercedes and MAN. And Volvo that have come to the fore in that regard. But we're still a good bit off yet to see them in the mainstream distribution market in the cities, for example.
I think you made a really good point there, though, Jarlath, about the, it's a very, very sort of fragmented island, isn't it? You know, what I mean by fragmented is it's there's cities and towns, but they're miles and miles apart, so where we'd be using a refuse collection vehicle over here that might have, about 26 tonnes, have a range of about 75, 100 kilometres for a local town would do. But where you are, it just the technology is probably just not there with the range, is it?
That's right. Yeah, we have five major towns here in this county. And majority of them are capital town is 17 miles from us here. The next one is about 30 miles away on a circumference. So a waste disposal vehicle, electric powered wouldn't work here, Matthew, because it would take too long to get from one after doing a day's work or a morning's work in this town to go to the next town. They'd probably be out of charge because of the whole electrical power required. A natural gas one will probably be more successful, I imagine. And I've seen some figures for the compressed natural gas uptake, which is promising. We have an infrastructure in the pipeline at the moment, pardon the pun, but they, the National Gas Networks Organization, which is a semi-state company, are planning to have something like 14 infrastructural service stations around the country to serve the gas networks, the compressed natural gas side of it. We don't have LNG yet, Matthew, and I doubt if we will have, because they want to concentrate on natural compressed natural gas, which will do the distance. As you know, Iveco and Mercedes-Benz have and Scania have come to the fore in compressed natural gas, and I've test driven them all here, and they are quite satisfactory. For example, they will go from Dublin to Cork and back, which is about a round trip of 550 kilometres, and they do that in comfort, and that's sufficient. Because when you look at the overall cost, it's about a third more expensive than a diesel. And over its lifespan of 5 to 7 years, it will pay for itself. The cost of the gas itself is cheaper. It has about a 33% lower carbon footprint, which is very beneficial, as you know. And for certain operations, certainly like the waste disposal vehicles, that would be certainly a big option. And Mercedes-Benz have the Connect, which is natural gas, which is one of the, and also Dennis Siegel would be to the fore in that respect. And one of our major organizations in that field are just about to buy a fleet of new Renault with compressed natural gas units with the Terborg refuse collection on it. So it is moving forward. And again, the long haul side of it, there is, let's say, a small interest in the LNG because of the fact that there is an infrastructure in the UK, even small as it may be, but it's more prominent, as you know, across Europe. So you will get the distance from it. I remember when we did have the test drive in the Iveco Stralis LNG at the time, before the S-Way came in, that you could do something like, was about 900 kilometres altogether for the LNG in comparison to about 500 for the CNG. So again,
you know, I'm just saying it was one of the gas products that they did, certainly over here, they did the Land's End to John O'Groats, or John O'Groats to Land's End, whichever which way around it was, on a single tank full of you know, on a single tank of gas, which, well, you know, I thought was really, really, really impressive. And I think, you know, there's certain markets where that type of technology is going to be far better suited to, as you say, where a lot of other markets seems to be going with electric vehicles. Jarlath, is there anything out there at the minute, you know, truck or van that's actually impressing you with the minute? Is there anything you think, you know, that's pretty good? You know, the sort of level of technology, is anything you really sort of think that's excellent?
Well, do you know what I found very interesting, Matthew, is our last edition of the magazine, I did a full history of LDV. And that came about because during the first lockdown, I started to tidy up my attic and I came across press packs going back 20 years, actually.
Yeah.
I came across the original one for the MAN-TGA, which I now cherish because, as you know, we have the full new range of truck generation from MAN. And I had the menu card, the whole layout of the speakers and the full press pack, which came in from Germany, which was quite impressive. But I also came across the press pack from the launch of the LDV Maxus, which was in Sheffield in 2004. You could have been at that as well, Matthew, as far as I remember. But
I was there. I was there. Yes. Yeah. They launched the vehicle at the. Was it the Magnum Centre, something like
yes.
that? And we spent the sort of the afternoon driving around the sort of South Yorkshire hills and things
yes.
like that. Yeah, was
yes.
that 2004?
Yes.
And blimey, you're making me feel old now.
And as you know, the LDV brand had gone through quite a number of owners and exchanges in that period of time. And I thought it was intriguing because I did keep a track of it because at that time, it was quite a good product because, as you know, it was jointly designed with Daewoo and LDV, the original LDV people at the time. And then they got into various difficulties and it ended up primarily in Chinese hands. And as you know, the Harris Group brought in the LDV product and did quite well for a number of years with the original LDV Maxus, which they called the V80 and the electric version, the EV80. But what they have brought in now is the replacement of this range, and they're calling it the Maxus van E-Deliver 9 and the Deliver 9 electric version and the standard diesel version. And I must say, what really impressed me most is the transformation in the quality level that they have actually produced. Obviously, they have looked at the various brands out there. They've taken the best parts of them. And I must say, what I experienced in the first drive I undertook there not so long ago was that the heaviness, the solidness, the furniture and the fittings is second to none. And you would put it on par with the Mercedes Sprinter of this world, which is, as you know, is the Crafter, which is up there at the top level. And if you took the badges off it, Matthew, you wouldn't know what it was in that regard. It drove extremely well. It was tight. It was powerful. It was the quality of the use of equipment was top class. I couldn't fault it, and I was so impressed by it. Even when you close the doors or open the doors, it has the quality feel about it, and I think that's going to make a big impression because the price will be right as well. Because as you know,
I think that vehicle, if you look at where we are with the EV world at the moment, I mean, you, Giles, you're the same as me. Every day we get press releases coming in from pretty much every manufacturer under the sun, and it's all about electric vehicles. There's nothing else they're talking about at the minute. Certainly on van.
Yes.
And the fact that, I won't name the brand because it's not fair to do that, but a particular manufacturer launched a range of vehicles, probably 18 months before the vehicles were actually available, is quite telling. Now, the thing that Maxus has got in its favour,
yes,
this is a range of vehicles that's available now. We're not talking about 6, 8, 12 months down the line. You can actually fully, and that's probably, this is where the markets probably differ from what your market requirements are in Ireland and what our market requirements are over here, because the electric vehicles are moving at a pace. And the fact that you can get the vehicle pretty much off the shelf or without a big waiting list, not the most expensive, not the most cheapest, not the best, I'm just generalising, but availability. And what we're seeing is, and I do sound like a stuck record with this, but what we saw in the first lockdown was massive, massive improvements in air quality in inner areas. And you're absolutely right. It's the ratepayers now that will be making these demands on the local authorities to get their act sorted out with clean vehicles. And where there's been a vehicle available before, there's never been the demand, and it's switched round now. And I think that the fact that these vehicles are available here and now, it may not be everybody's choice, but it will be availability, and that for them will be the key to their success. I'm absolutely sure of that.
Well, that's a Harris Forte. That's been their philosophy for the last 40 years, Betty, because if you recall, when they were so successful with the Hino truck brand in the UK after Foden was put off the market, they came in and they acquired quite a number of Foden dealers, but they also had ready-to-work vehicles. So when an operator was applying for a contract, he had vehicles ready to work should he be successful, and he didn't have to wait 16 or 18 weeks for the truck and then get a body built, and so the contract might be over by the time he actually gets the vehicle. And they were very successful in that regard, and they have held on quite a number of them dealers to sell the LDV and now Maxus. But also what has been an important development is that they've now invested in a massive warehouse in Warrington, and they've just opened that there a couple of weeks back. So they will have parts and components on sale there, but also it'll be a distribution center for Maxus. And as you know, the Maxus range is increasing because they have the new E-Deliver 3, which is a small compact electric van that comes under the E-Deliver 9. And that's available in panel van and also in chassis cab, as will the E-Deliver 9. And also they have a pickup coming in as well, which you may have seen already over in the UK, and that's coming on, which will be a major mover, because the pickup market, I know from here, example, is really catching on. not only from a business user, but also from a leisure pursuit operator as well. And for example, the Ford Ranger has experienced an 80% increase in sales from 2019 to 2020, which is phenomenal. Now, it's a pretty good bus, as you know, and they have quite a range of vehicles, you know, from the XL, XLT, to the Limited, to the Wildtrak, and they have the MSRT more support version, and now they have the Raptor. So they have quite an extensive range of product line, probably more than anybody else. And I must say, to answer your earlier question, I must say that the pickups have really come on with regards to their styling, to their comfort levels, and their capability and what they can do. And I had a quick run actually in the new Isuzu G-Max. And again, it's very impressive. We call it regeneration of the existing model. The body has changed, but the drivetrain is pretty much the same as before. But it's a great workhorse. And I remember being on the trip of the last launch, which was up in Yarm in Yorkshire. We returned for a family holiday about 6 months later, and we did the whole Whitby and Scarborough as well during that trip. Went to the old Aidensfield from the Harpy country. Remember I was telling you that, and it was very enjoyable. But again, the opportunity for the pickup market is there. As you know, Ford and Volkswagen are collaborating now for the next generation Amarok and next generation Ranger, which we'll probably see next year. And they will still be conventional diesel, Matthew. You mentioned about diesel and alternatives, but there are certain markets and certain applications that will have to rely on diesel, regardless of all the electric and hybrids in this world. And I think, we're probably very traditional in ways that there are certain work that you have to do with the diesel vehicle, no matter what.
Well, you've got to bear in mind as well, Giles, that the pickup market is generally a global platform, whether you're looking at Isuzu, looking at Toyota, whether you're looking at the joint venture with VW and Ford. You know, they do try to work on a global platform, and realistically, that vehicle could be running in the outback in Australia, it could be running in Brazil somewhere, it could be running in Bradford. You know, they've got to have sort of a common engine thing to go across a range of vehicles as well, haven't they?
Yeah, certainly. Well, if you look at the Ranger, for example, the ones that we get are made in South Africa, in Pretoria. I've been to the factory. And so they've come a hell of a long way to get there. And the majority of the others, like the Mitsubishis and the Toyotas and the Isuzus, are made in Thailand. Mitsubishi, when they launched the current L200, they brought us over to Thailand to the factory and to drive the vehicle in its prototype form, which was very interesting. And as you know, it's a very good-looking vehicle and has all the traits that the previous generations had. Sadly, Mitsubishi are withdrawing from the European market, so that will actually have an impact on new sales of the L200 in due course, because they will be in demand, because they will last for a long time, and their valuation will be increased as a consequence, I imagine.
I tell you what, Giles, it's really, really good to speak to somebody from my side of the fence, really, because, you know, what we've done, and everybody we've spoken to on the podcast for ITT Hub on CV Focus have been brilliant, but it's been very much either manufacturer-based or infrastructure-based, which are all really, really vitally important parts of the industry. But to sort of listen and talk to somebody that's sort of in media is probably facing the same issues and problems, and you know, for good and for bad, that I, you know, that we do as a publishing business, it's really great. But I mean, I must admit, you more so than me. I mean, you'd be probably away every week with, because I mean, you've got your commercial vehicle titles, you've got your motor caravan titles, you've got all kinds of things there that are relative to logistics and the movement of people and goods. And you know, I think the last time I was on a plane, I was coming back from a family holiday February last year, where by now we'd have been on and off, you more so than me, probably 20, 30 times, maybe even more. And, you know, just to be at home, it's a strange place. I mean, I love being at home, but, you know, the events, the press events, you know, the sort of banter, the sort of camaraderie, the things that we all share, you know, and it is, and I'm, I, you know, I would, I would, Also like to point out to the listeners, it is very, very long hours. It's very, very hard work. But when you're into the industry, it's fun. It's enjoyable. It is enjoyable. And I think we're very, very lucky, to very privileged as well, to have a job that we like, you know, and you know, we all enjoy. But as I say, it's been a very, very strange sort of 12 months, well, over 12 months for us all, really, I suppose, hasn't it? You started at the start of the podcast just talking about your family, just being at home around the family a lot. You know, it just doesn't happen, does it?
That's true. Well, the benefits has been that I got a lot of work done around the house and the farm that we live on, that I put on the long finger. On the other side, then, I really miss the events, the networking, the exhibitions that we'd all attend and network with people. You may not get the business instantly, but down the road, it'll probably come to you. But what most importantly, though, Matthew, and you've probably seen it yourself, is that the transition to digital is happening faster than we had imagined. And I spend a lot of time now. We have four websites, so I have to update them every day. We spend a lot of time on proposals transcending from business on our websites, either through dedicated e-zines that we send out on behalf of our customers, or digital advertising, or just inquiries generally from something that we may have actually put up online. And also, the social media activity has been increased enormously. Our figures just went through the roof during the course of the first lockdown in particular, where we worked hard on our websites, but also looked at the social media from LinkedIn to Twitter to Facebook to Instagram, which is the new medium for me, which I'm working on. But what it has done is spread the gospel according to free publications across a broader audience, and has brought in more readers as a consequence. The only downside is that the financial benefits from the digital is not as beneficial from the printed media, as you know. So that's something that we have to be very conscious of going forward. Now, we managed last year to publish each edition each month, but during the course of the latter part of the first lockdown and into the second one, we published digitally only, without any advertising. So we did that to keep the titles running, and also to keep our employees with some work, even though a majority of them are actually on downtime in some fashion or other, that they weren't as busy as they were normally would be, like ourselves, going to events, test driving trucks or whatever. And so last year, as a substitute, we introduced Strengthened Unity Transport Heroes Award, where we actually acknowledged the main players that were out there in the front line as key workers that either were nominated by somebody that said that they merited a special prize, or they could nominate themselves, or as our customer could nominate them, where they would be supplying goods and services to them, and they just noted that they were either haulier or as in case of a couple of car companies, went to the bottom line to supply vehicles, and also some drivers, as the case may be, to bring key workers to their hospitals or wherever they were actually serving the need of the people that were affected by coronavirus. So that was very successful for us, actually. That worked out extremely well. We did a virtual presentation announcement, and that gained a lot of traction from us.
I tell you what, Giles, you know, I mean, obviously, similar sort of businesses, similar sort of market, or similar sort of reach in different marketplaces. It really does make you think about it, doesn't it? You really, really got to get the sort of grey matter working into thinking, you know, how you can best navigate through it all. I mean, we were fortunate with all of our magazines. We didn't drop a single issue in hard copy at all. But, you know, there weren't, well, I've not had sleepless nights, but there were certain times that, you know, you concern, because, you know, you just sort of, particularly when we went from March into April, and you're thinking, God, what's happening? You know, because we just sort of stuff sort of beginning to sort of disappear off one end of the conveyor belt. So we had to be putting more and more stuff at the other end just to sort of keep the revenues and everything, and keep everything moving as it should be. And obviously keeps, you know, broadcasting the news as we did.
Yeah. I suppose we have an obligation to do that, Matthew, because that's what we do every day, but in a different platform for some of us. And there was plenty of news out there because there's plenty happening in that regard from a national and also from an international point of view. And when you look at how the vehicle manufacturers dealt with it, as you know, we've had some interviews with some of the leading brands and how they actually coped with the downturn in reducing the production and how they looked after their staff in that regard. Because what I find, and so what happened in the previous recession, going back to 2008 and 2009, Matthew, that a lot of good people left the industry and never came back. And I think there was a fear this time. And thankfully, the government put in place with the various wage payments and salary payments during the lockdown periods that they actually could manage, the companies could manage to retain their customers, or excuse me, their employees, because of the fact that if somebody of we'd say senior management that left, they're very hard to replace for a start, and the company will suffer as a consequence. So the implementation of the subsidy of the wages was a great move. Okay, our generation and our next generation are probably paying for it in taxes, but at least they managed to survive. And when you look at the upturn that the vehicle manufacturers are experiencing now, especially into the first quarter and into the second quarter with orders, that is very heartening to hear. We did an interview with the Iveco boss at the truck business unit in Iveco in Turin, Luca Schra, who used to be the managing director of UK and Ireland, if you remember, for Iveco.
Yeah, I remember Luca. Really, really nice guy. Luca, he's a fantastic guy.
And he did a very good job when he was over this side. And we had a good chat with him there last week on behalf of the International Van of the Year jury. And he was telling us that basically the order book is very positive and they are up and running again to nearly full capacity, which is great to see. And they're looking at new markets and new alternative fuels, of course, and that's the way they have to think now. And also, he did admit that they lost out on the whole camper van explosion of in the marketplace last year. And they're looking at converting, talking to converters for the daily panel van now that would suit the leisure side of the marketplace, which is really growing. As you know, the English producers are extremely busy in producing caravans and camper vans, and the latest trend now is not your call it your B class where you have the chassis and cab and the build a body on it. The majority of business is coming from a cheaper option, which is the actual panel van that's converted into a camper van, and the majority of brands.
Well, the daily is the perfect platform for that as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's just better than the most because it has a bigger capacity, Matthew, as regards the volume, and it's also a strength. Now, they may actually suffer from the overall weight and the payload aspect to keep it under the 3.5 tons for the license point of view. But I'm sure that's something they can work on because the interior can be worked with materials now. And they don't have to over-specify it inside like a standard top-class camper van. You know, when you think about it, there are two sets customers for our camper vans. One is the young families with the young kids, and the other one is the older generation of the retirees. And they don't really want to spend an awful lot of money on the particular product because it's going to be an additional vehicle in their household. So if they had an option of something like this, I think it would really work because it had the space that we required, because it is kind of claustrophobic. We had a camper van ourselves here for 7 years, and it does take a bit of getting used to, but it's a wonderful experience and it's a great adventure, especially if you have a young family.
I think the way that people are looking at the holidays now, I mean, as I said, we have had various announcements, and I do know that certainly on the news, travel, foreign holidays seem to be, you know, people wanting to book, but I think a lot of people will want to stay within the British Isles. I think, you know, the traditional sort of family holiday that I remember as a kid will probably be set to return, where people are not going to be bothered to travel too far away this year. I think if you've got a motor caravan, mobile haul rental business, I think you're probably in a very, very well, you know, good position for the next couple of years. Because if people are forced to try something new and they actually quite like it, you think, oh, it's good, this. And as I say, if you've got a small family and you do like the outdoors, or you just wanting something different, then why not? Why not try it? And I think you're probably right. The daily is, the Iveco daily is probably one of those high volume vehicle, high volume in capacity, I should say, internal capacity, that could give a really, really nice, good living space.
I agree, yes, yes. And it has the automatic gearbox, as you know, and a very good 3-litre diesel engine, which would be very economical, and it would they last, you know, because the lifespan of these vehicles are pretty good. Anytime we go to Italy, Matthew, we still see early generation daily still doing their business to their heart's content in various parts of Italy, yeah. As you know.
So still running,
yeah,
still working,
yeah.
When we were talking earlier, we were going to say this is going to be an Irish special, is this? And we normally allow 30 minutes for these things, and we're just coming past 50 minutes at the minute. I'll ask you one question before we disappear, and you can answer it from the where do you? And I've asked everybody that we've done the podcast with, where do you see the industry being in 10 years' time? Where do you see the commercial vehicle industry being in 10 years' time? You know, what sort of vehicles are we going to see? You know, where do you see it, Jarlath?
Well, I see that there will be more amalgamation of brands. There will be less brands around. You'll probably see more Chinese brands or Asian brands coming into the European market. With regard to autonomous vehicles, we are probably still 10 years away in regards to the application. While the innovation is well and good, Matthew, it's only going to work in certain areas, like airports, for example, in big compounds like docks areas that they may have a remote-controlled system in place. With regard to fuels, hydrogen would probably be to the fore in long-haul operations, and it would be a transcend from natural gas, particularly LNG, because the proposal in place at the moment is that CNG and LNG will work now as an alternative, and the infrastructure that will be in place for these gases will be perfect for the storage of hydrogen, liquid hydrogen, for the fuel cell technology that will be in due course for long-haul operations. As you know, the hydrogen is zero emission. All that comes out from the tailpipe is water and vapor, but it offers up to 1,000 horsepower and 1,000 miles. We've experienced that. We went to Arizona to experience the first Nikola development, which is a start-up operation that Iveco have now tied in, and they're actually going to make the hydrogen-powered vehicles for Europe in their Ulm plant in Germany, along by the River Danube, which is also the plant which they make the Magirus-Deutsch fire engines, if you recall. And so you have hydrogen, autonomous to a degree, platooning maybe, but again, that would need the specialist infrastructure. Some of the big manufacturers are not very keen on it because they feel that the actual savings are not sufficient for the amount of development that would be required, because no more than the autonomous, it'll require a certain amount of legislation changes. And also when you see that the insurance issue could be a problem in that regard, when you look at the overall costs involved, I don't think the savings will be as beneficial as they imagine. So you probably see that the home delivery side will continue to increase to the detriment of the high street shops. The way people shop now is completely different. And what I would imagine that the bigger cities won't have the congestion problem as they are experiencing maybe at the moment. Their air quality will probably improve because there'll be less activities within the cities and become more residential rather than retail, shall we simply, for example, that your Oxford Street may not become as busy with high-profile shops because they'd all have their e-commerce opportunity for people to shop, because people like doing that. They spend more time browsing on their internet now, looking at various items of clothing or merchandise or household goods, and they have a great choice there because the actual options are there for them, and it's very, very convenient to click the button. But the only downside is that their expectations are very high. In other words, when they press the button, they expect a knock on the door the following day. They don't expect that the product may actually come from China or Taiwan, for example, and how long that can take from there to Europe, to a hub, from there then to a warehouse in Ireland or England, as the case may be, and then distribute it through a van or a home delivery service. Home shopping from grocery point of view will probably increase. I see that, you know, that's becoming more convenient as in that regard. With the whole aspect of employment will be a factor as well, as we've experienced. The majority of us are now working from home, and that will change with regard to the infrastructure that's already there, with regard to office space in the cities. They will become less required now because of the way people have changed their whole aspect of working from home, maybe 2 to 3 days a week, and maybe go to the office for 2 days a week. But the office won't need to be as big because there won't have as many people. And it'll be rotating desks. So you could have a desk that I will be sharing with you, Matthew, for 2 to 3 days a week. And so they need less office space as a comes. So that'll be less less expenditure for the big brand companies that have these big high-rise offices and facilities to the degree. With regard to general transport, and I mentioned there about the goods coming in from China, you probably see that the Silkway train route will become more popular to get the goods from Asia into Europe. And as you know, that's been worked on at the moment, and it's going to come faster and be more reliable, and it'll be more economical, I imagine, as well. With regard to the ports, they'll become more automated with the container movements, I imagine, like they have currently in Rotterdam, where it's mostly loaded and unloaded by remote control from a high-rise office rather than the cranes, which would be a benefit, I imagine, to a lot of crane operators, that they can do it in more comfort surroundings, shall we say, not to be up in the crane for pretty much half the day. So in general, the advent of electromobility will become to the fore. You will see a lot more startups in the cities operating with their delivery services. As you know, some of the light commercial brands are working with various others to see if they can come up with a system that will become an autonomous type delivery service if it can work. But still, it goes to need some kind of a driver, I imagine, because it's still going to have some face-to-face networking opportunity to meet the customer and get the goods delivered properly, I imagine. That's just off the top of my head at the moment, Matthew.
Jal, I can't believe it. We've done over an hour. It's been really, really good to catch up with you. And it looks like it's thumbs up for the ITT Hub show in the end of June and early July. Listen, thanks very much for your time. I know you'll be at the show. It'll be good to catch up. Again, Jal, thanks very, very much, mate. And we'll see you soon.